Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. So what's the fourth shapeage?
I'm going to delve into the Andy's name list again. John Hurt. Sir John Hurt, the most beautifulest human being I've had the fortune of meeting, because he is so lovely and so generous. And what I loved about John is it took me a while to meet him and arrange a shoot, because at the time, when I first started reaching out to him, he was living in Ireland, up the top of a mountain somewhere, so he was hard to get hold of. Then he moved back to the UK, and eventually we got to meet, and he was born on the exact same day as my dad. Same day, same year, 22nd of January 1940. So I got this infinity with him that in 1940, on January 22nd, two babies were born. One was being an actor, one was going to have a son who's going to end up photographing. And so I become good friends with John. And whenever I shot a project, whenever I did anything, John was the first person I'd go to, because I know he'd say yes. So I'd done this thing with Vivian Westwood called Save the Arctic. Who's the first person to call? John. I've done the thing for BAFTA. Who's the first person? John. Done something for Elton John. Who's the first person? John. And he's always generous and gifted. Now, the years went by. In the meantime, he'd moved to Norfolk, which was great, because my parents were still living there. And he phoned up and he said, Andy, when are you going to come and see your parents next? I said, maybe at the weekend. When you do, love, come around and see me. Let's have a chat. I was okay. So I went around to see him, and he had this lovely house in the middle of nowhere in Norfolk. It's in East Runton. And it's a lovely house. And in his garden, he had this outhouse, but he made it into an art studio. He'd sit there painting and writing and everything. And we were sat in there. He poured us a pint of red wine each. And he said, darling, I've got something to tell you. He said, yes, John. He said, I've got cancer. I've been given months to live. I wanted you to know before the press gets hold of it, because I just wanted you to know. And I was quite bereft, because it was almost like, you know, a family figure telling you. And he said to me, you're more than a photographer. I said, what do you mean, John? He went, you're more than just a photographer. I see you. You're more than a photographer. I said, John, I don't understand. Oh, he said, the way you see the world would be amazing in a moving image. Using what you do in the moving image would be magical. Can you be back here next weekend with a camera, a moving image camera? I said, well, I can be, but I've never. He said, come back here and direct me. I want you to direct me next weekend. So we finished our wine. We had a bit of a cry and a hug, and I went back to London. I went to a camera shop and I said, I need to get a camera that can do film. Something I can just press play and stop, you know? And it's okay. And he said, you'll need sound software as well. So you get that. So Calumet in London gave me all the higher stuff. And the next weekend, I went back to John. And I thought, you know, I don't. Directing The Elephant Man, directing Quentin Crisp, you know, directing, you know, all these figures he's made famous at the years. What do I do? And so he let's get set up in the art studio. So he got set up, and I got a green screen set up, and so I done the lighting I would do for a photograph I'd done for this. And I saw in the corner of his room, there's a priest's robe, you know, the dog collar. And I said, oh, what was that? He said, yes, my father was a priest. And for no reason other to give me more thinking time, I said, John, do you want to put it on? So he said, of course I will. So he dressed up as this priest. And I was like, what should I do? How do I want to direct him? I still don't know what to do. He sat down. He went, okay, darling, direct me. And I said, do you know the words of Imagine by John Lennon? Of course I bloody do. And I said, well, how about your priest speak the words like I'm one of your parishioners. Speak the words as if you're giving me a parable. Imagine there's no heaven. And he did this entire Imagine in one take. And we'd done it. And he said, Signor Gotz, shall we go again? John, you did probably more than I wanted. And he said, let's do it one more time. He said, give me a note. I said, what's a note? You know, give me an idea. You know, give me your limp. That's called a note in the business. I went, okay. When you say, get to the line, imagine there's no heaven. You're a priest. Give it a little wry smile. Now imagine there's no heaven. And I'll keep that. And so he did it once more. And then we had another drink, I said goodbyes. And that was the last time I saw John. And that was the last thing he ever recorded. So I videoed John's last ever recording of him doing Imagine. And I showed it to a friend of mine who knew John, Charles Dance. And he started crying. And he said, this is the most beautiful, iconic piece of filmmaking I've ever seen. And so John making me do filming has now inspired me. My next direction, I'm going to direct something. I'm going to write and direct something. And that's a little burner that John gave me. And so if it wasn't for John, I wouldn't have that little burning desire in the back of my head.
And Andy, is that in the public domain, that film?
I showed it only to Anwyn, that's John's wife, and I showed it to a few of his friends and his son, Nick. And then I just kept it to me. And then Anwyn said one day, people should see this. So I've not known what to do with it. So I put it on YouTube. So it's on YouTube, but I will find something to do with it one day. But what I will do, I don't know, but it's up there.
And will you please share the link with me and with us? Because I just think I just have to go and see it. That's because of all the faces in all the world, John Hurt had the most beautiful line lived in. I mean, what a subject.
And the fact is, his voice is so iconic. And I used to tease him all the time because we used to talk about favourite characters, favourite roles, favourite movies. And I said to him, to me, John, your best role ever was Skeleton Key. And then he his grumpy face, and but I played a man with a stroke and I couldn't speak. I said, exactly. You couldn't speak, so you didn't rely on your voice. You relied on your acting. And so but he knew his voice was his money. He knew that. So it's always teased him that Skeleton Key, where he played a man who couldn't speak, was his best role ever. So he
liquid gold was his voice. But also, I'm just so hooked by the Imagine by John Lennon set to John Hurt standing in his father's priest garb. Good grief.
Yeah.
Okay, we've done your shapage. Woohoo! And now on three things that inspire you. If there's any overlap or you've covered it already, that's completely fine. So three things that inspire you, Andy.
My MA I did was an MA in photography and history of art.
Yeah.
Because I love art. So I'd say an inspiration is L.S. Lowry for two reasons. One of them is quite epic. But the first reason is I loved his mindset. I loved the fact people took the mickey out of him because they thought his art was too naive, too simplistic, too repetitive. It was, you know, boring. He wasn't skilled enough to paint shadows, so he didn't bother, you know. And people took the mickey out of him. And he knew people took the mickey out of him. And he said, I don't care. This is how I paint. This is how I like to paint. And I will continue painting this way. And I have the same mindset. Some people say, you know, why don't you try color? Why don't you try putting people in smart clothes? I have them groomed. It's like, well, no, this is my style. This is how I want to photograph. I'm not going to be fit in a box. You know, you're a celebrity, a photographer. You're going to photograph celebrities in the celebrity. I mean, for example, let's say Brad Pitt was being photographed by Vanity Fair. They'll wheel him to a studio where he'll have his hair and makeup done, give him a suit to borrow, then have four or five lighting directors to light him, to tell him how to pose. Then the photographer's wheeled in, click, wheeled out. And I don't want to shoot Brad Pitt, the character. I want to shoot Brad Pitt, the person. So I don't care if his hair's out there. I don't care if he's got spots. I don't care how he's dressed. And I think my mindset is with Larry. So he is a massive, massive. And another reason is there was, I'm not going to say dearly departed, but let's just say he's gone, an art critic called Brian Sewell.
Yes.
And Brian Sewell didn't like Larry and his paintings. He didn't like me because he didn't think photography is an art form. And I went to a book launch of his, and it was in Mayfair, just around the corner. And he clocked me as he saw me come in the room. And in an elevated voice, he said, Andy Gotts, he did photography what Larry was for painting. He thought that was a put down, but I took that as, thank you. And that's exactly yes. who thank I you. Am. Yeah. Thank you. So Larry, he's one of the people who I...
Yes. You know, and the iconic theme tune of Matchstalk Men and Matchstalk...
Do you remember? Yeah, exactly. Michael and... There's two men, Michael and someone.
Yes, I wish it had come to me. But yes, Lowry, totally iconic because of the matchstick, no shadows, all of that. And also, I'll be me is the great punchline from that. I'll be me, you be you. That's fantastic.
Yes, exactly. And the fact is, you know, he was an old man when he started painting.
Yeah.
And it got to a stage where his paintings weren't making him any money. So he used to be looked after by a home help.
Yeah,
and so he used to paint on the back of cardboard boxes as payment to the people who looked after him in his old age. And the fact is, well, it's like Van Gogh, for example, yes. You know, sold one painting, made no money. And I think there's artists like that, like Caravaggio, Rembrandt, they had a something magical. When I do my lighting is Caravaggio-esque. I mean, chiaroscuro, I think it's called, the play of light and shadow.
Yeah.
I try and use that in my work.
And sorry for the thick question. I can't remember the time Larry died, but did you ever meet him? Sorry if that's
No. He must have died because I watched a thing recently on an aeroplane going to LA, and it was Ian McKellen. Someone found tapes of interviews that Larry had given over the years.
Yeah.
And so Ian McKellen was pretending to be Larry, lip syncing the actual tapes. And I think that must have been done in 76, 77. Yeah. I was alive when Larry was alive, but yes. I was a kid.
A bit like me and Stan Laurel, equivalent universe, absolutely.
Radio. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Another one was Hitchcock. I love Hitchcock because of his work ethic. Not so much his movies. His movies are amazing. I love the movies, but it was the way he worked, the way his ethic, where he used to hire a member of staff, he used to sack them on the first day, just to keep everyone, you know, on point, and little things like that. I thought the way he worked, the way he structured a movie, the way he structured how things would happen, when it would happen. He didn't listen to the studio, didn't listen to what the producer said to him. He, as the director, ruled the roost, and it was his way or the highway. It's a bit like, I mean, I said the modern day equivalent would be David Lynch, where I saw a little video clip the other day where David Lynch was doing a movie, he had headphones on, and he had someone from the studio next to him that said, "Can't we shorten that scene?" He went, "Short of that, how dare you tell me to short that?" Well, you know, and it's like, you know, I love that attitude where actually, you know, if they say short, that's what you do because it's their money, but it's the attitude. It's my movie. And so I like Hitchcock because of that. And my third one is another, pulling your name out, Sidney Poitier. And I was so fortunate. I've met him a few times over the years. And the first time I met him, he was telling me his life story. And it was just so lovely where he was saying about he was raised in the Bahamas in like this little shanty village, and his parents made $5 a month and they used to pick cotton and stuff. And where he lived, there was no hospital. They had a soothsayer and this kind of stuff. So Sydney was born 5 weeks too early. And so the mother gave birth to Sydney and wasn't breathing and thought the baby was dead. And so the mother literally got up with blood all over her legs and everything, got up, went to the soothsayer and said, "No, my son's has been born. I don't know what to do." And so the soothsayer got hold of her hands, went into a bit of a trance, said, "Don't worry, your son will walk amongst kings." And so the mother went home. The father, thinking the baby it was dead, had wrapped it, mummified the baby and put it in the crib. He went, no, the baby will be fine. So unwrapped it, gave a hit on the back. Wee, wee, wee. That's how Sydney started his life. And he's telling the story with tears streaming down his face. And he's telling me about the struggle about getting from the Bahamas to New York to start, and how he's never taken seriously. Again, it's like Larry, never taken seriously because of his thick accent. He said, "I had to watch British movies to lose the accent."
Yes.
And he said, I then had to learn that. "I then had the hard task of leaving the theatre to start movies in Los Angeles." And he said, no one had done that. No black man had made the transition from theatre to movies.
Yeah.
And I went and I tried and I auditioned and no one would give me a chance. No one would give me, they just saw me as a black face and they didn't give me a chance. And he said, one day I was given a chance to do a movie. And in the movie, this is him speaking. He said, in the movie, I was always in a one shot. I was never in a two person shot. We see two actors. I was in a one shot because they had cut me out of the film. You know, because some states didn't have black men in film. And he was telling me this story. And he said, and I owe my career to Tony Curtis. And I said, why? And he said, Tony and I did a movie called The Defiant Ones. And he said, I and Tony play prisoners. We're shackled together. We're on a train. Tony plays a bigot. I'm a black man. And we escape. The entire movie is a bigot, racist, and a black man shackled together.
Yes.
We're on the run. We had the same amount of screen time, same amount of dialogue, but the poster was Defiant Ones, starring Tony Curtis.
Yes.
And Tony said to the studio, unless we have equal billing, take my name off the movie. And so Sydney was the first black actor ever to headline a movie. And he said, if it wasn't for Tony, I wouldn't be here. Sidney Poitier wouldn't be here. Wesley Snipes wouldn't be here. Denzel Washington would. He said, we owe it all to a white man. And that's him, with such respect, with someone who wanted to help out someone, you know, the gift of a good deed.
Yes.
And I think that's resonated, sort of stayed with me, doing a bit of good for someone, and you're getting nothing back, not even a thank you, getting nothing back, but you're doing something good for the good of something.
Yes. So a wonderful, simple, random act of kindness, or not random, but a very specific act of kindness. Love that. And now we're on to the very exciting bit, borrow from the film Up, where the dog goes, oh, squirrels. So what are your two squirrels? What would you say your two monsters of distraction are? What two things never fail to grab your attention, Andy One-Shot Gotz, irrespective of anything else that might be going on for you in your very eclectic life?
When I see the news, when I read articles, when I flick the internet, what gets me, what gets my attention? Young celebrities and their attitude. I've got this beef with some, you look at these old actors who shine with the glory, who do anything for anyone.
Yeah.
Sometimes you see a headline, a famous singer was smiled at in a restaurant and she sent her bodyguard off to tell him off. It's like the arrogance now of younger celebrities.
Yeah.
That stops me. I'm dumbfounded. I mean, it's like, how dare they tell... The public aren't less than them. The public, you know, I'm not going to say they owe their career or they owe their fame, but if it wasn't for these people buying the records, wasn't for them buying Netflix or going to the cinema, they wouldn't have. So it's the arrogance of some of the younger celebrities.
Yes.
That's a, whoa, hello, stop.
I love it when a squirrel is a bit of a beef as well. So thank you for that. Incredulity of arrogance of young celebrity. I love that answer.
That is, absolutely. And the other one, I'd say, and it's usually because out of all social media, the one I'm on most is Instagram. I mean, as people will know, you know, you can do an Instagram post and it posts on Twitter or post it on Facebook. So literally, I do one thing on Instagram and it posts everywhere. So I'm on Instagram the most. And when I'm scrolling through Instagram, what stops me is the brilliance of makeup in film, the prosthetics, how the skill behind that in a different life. That's a career I'd have done, because I'm lucky enough that because of my job, I've met a lot of these people who do prosthetics.
Yeah.
For example, there's a guy called Barry Gower. He's won Emmys and you name it. He's won Golden Globes. He invented Vecna in Stranger Things. He invented the Night King in Game of Thrones. You know, he invents. Wow. He's just finished making Johnny Depp into Ebenezer for this Christmas as a Scrooge. And looking at what he does, and I've got another friend, David. He won the Oscar for making Gary Oldman into Winston Churchill.
Yes.
There's one thing: seeing prosthetics of a monster, because a monster is imaginary, but seeing prosthetics to make a face look human and realistic.
Yes.
I think this skill, so that stops me. When I'm scrolling through and you see a bit of a face, so you think it's a face, then you can see a bit of latex flopped out. And so that always stops me. I always have to stop and think, how was that painted?
Yeah.
How is that hair punched? How is that? I zoom in and sort of look. And so to answer your question, prosthetics and special effects makeup is one of my squirrels, one of my nuts, as it were.
Lovely squirrels, lovely nuts. And now the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you, Andy Gotz, we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
During lockdown, I got obsessed with Bob Ross and his Happy Little Clouds. And so I learnt during lockdown to paint landscapes Bob Ross style. So that's what I did. So, I mean, for people who don't know who Bob Ross is, he had this technique called a wet-on-wet painting technique. So he'd get his canvas, get an oil and a white paint, laminate the entire white canvas, then paint on that wetness, so he can move the paint around, so it blends together.
Yeah.
And I taught myself Bob Ross painting during lockdown. That's something.
Have you got a particular sort of da-da piece that you produce, you're thinking, that's the one?
I did a traditional Bob Ross landscape with snow-top mountains and a few pine trees and a few grassy knolls. To me, I remember watching Bob Ross when I was 6 or 7, watching him on screen, because it was such a unique experience. It'd be just a black background with an easel and this man with an afro. He was pleasant. He was talking to you. You're there watching him. And in 24 minutes, I'm going to do an entire landscape.
Yes.
And so it wasn't, you know, over the course of a week, but in 24 minutes, he'd do a wet white canvas into a beautiful landscape. And I was mesmerized being a child. And then during lockdown, I stumbled across a YouTube thing, and what people don't know about me is that, and also another little thing people will never know about me, when I was doing my first degree, I didn't get, my parents couldn't afford to send me to university. I didn't get a bursary. I didn't get a scholarship. I had to work every day for about 3 years. So for every day for 3 years, I was a nightclub bouncer. And I'd start work at 9 o'clock at night, 3 o'clock every morning. I was a bouncer to make money to fund my photography. When I left 3 years later, most of my peers were in debt. I was in the green. I left uni with money in the bank. So that's another something people don't know about me.
Now ask how tall you are, because I wasn't perceiving you'd be a big, bruising 6'7" bouncer stereotypically.
I'm 5'2". No, I'm 5'10". 5'10". So I mean, the average height for a Caucasian person in the UK is 5'8". So I'm above average height, five foot ten.
Love that. Also, I'm loving the through line of how you're very admiring of one of a kind. So the John Hurts of the world, the Stephen Fry's, even the Bob Ross you've just described, there is a through line of you being very attracted to the sort of universe of people who are totally idiosyncratic, even your own work, your true authentic, I'll be me, you be you. And that quote that I heard Stephen Fry quoting Oscar Wilde, be yourself because everyone else is taken, is a really good quote. We have shaken your tree, hurrah. Ooh. Now we stay in the clearing, which is within your man cave, which is where you are, Mayfair. And now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. And again, I think you've been giving us this by the bucket load in any case, but when you're at purpose and in flow, Andy Gotts, Hollywood's favourite photographer, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
I'm happiest when I'm actually doing nothing. I feel pleasure when, if you'd imagine, because of the time zones, I'm up really, really late in the morning. So it's maybe to about 3 o'clock in the morning, talking to LA for the time difference.
Yeah.
And then first thing in the morning, our time, I speak to people in Asia.
Yeah.
So literally all my day is I'm doing something. So my, you know, I'm at my happiest when I'm sat down, when emails are off, computers are turned down. And maybe, you know, I have go-to movies. I have movies I can sit down, turn the sound down, and I can voice every line of every actor because I've seen it like 80, 90 times. And so maybe watching a movie with the sound barely up and just watching it with a blank look on my face, letting it wash over me. It's like Trading Places.
Yes.
I watch Trading Places every day of the week, and it's great because the story behind it, the making someone what is not, then making them back again, but you can't turn back time because it'll bite you. I mean, the whole story arc of Trading Places, yes, it's not in everyone's top 100. Of course it won't, but it's my favorite. And my favorite movie of all time is a 1955 version of The Lady Killers, not the Tom Hanks butchered version he did, which I tell him is rubbish. It's the original.
Yeah,
I mean, there's something magical about that, because Did you know
him as well?
I mean, the cast. I mean, you had Danny Green. You had Herbert Lom, who was a friend of mine, who passed away. You had Peter Sellers. But did you know the part was actually written for Alastair Sim? So the professor role. I was friends with George Cole, and George was he lived with Alastair Sim when he was growing up. He didn't have parents who cared about his well-being. So George Cole lived with Alastair Sim. And so if you look at some of George's early movies,
yes,
with Alastair, whether it was the Trinians or whether, you know, George would pop up. And he told me this little story where Alastair was doing a movie and it was a sequel to a movie. So he couldn't do Ladykillers. So casting people found Alec Guinness, and they made him up to look like Alastair Sim with the long hair and the crooked teeth. So some people think Alastair Sim is the lead in it, but actually it should have been, but it's the lovely Alec Guinness.
And I'm assuming you've photographed, of course you have, Eddie Murphy as well, talking about Trading Places.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I love good things in movies. I like the crossover parts in movies. So sometimes when a movie happens and there's another movie and they make a reference to the movie. And so I love it in you've got like Trading Places, where you have these two arrogant, rich people, and they put all their money in stocks, and they bet that the orange crop will fail that year, and they put all their money in. And then the Eddie Murphy character and the Dan Aykroyd character shimmy around, so actually it makes money. So these two old guys lose all their money, they're thrown out of the stock exchange, and then they're left without a penny. And then in Coming to America, there's a scene where the prince comes to America and he says, I must give away all my money. He gets this big wad of money and throws it at these two tramps are the two old men. They go, we're back. And it's things like that. And I love the crossover movies. I love it.
I love Looking Good, Elwood. Feeling Good, Elwood.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
Wonderful. So now we're coming up towards the end of the show now, whereby I'm going to award you with a cake now, Andy Gotts. Hurrah! First of all, do you like cake?
Let's say, if we were in a restaurant and you said, you can have a dessert, I always have apple and rhubarb crumble. That's my favourite. But if you had to say, have a cake or I will punch you, I'll have a carrot cake.
You can have both. Rhubarb, apple crumble, bit of ice cream and a bit of cake. The flavour of choice there. What was the flavour you said? A carrot.
Carrots. Lovely. Carrot cake.
You get to put a cherry on your cake now. What's the favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour and pulled you towards your future?
It's funny. I didn't even think of this question. That's off the radar, but all of a sudden three came in my head at once. So I'll do the first one. It's a Mark Twain one. And it's a lovely one. And it's the two most important things in your life. One is when you're born. Two is when you find out why. I like that a lot. I like that. And also, I like the Richard O'Brien one from the Rocky Horror Show, where don't dream it, be it. I like that one. I also like the Phineas T. Barnum one. There's a sucker born every minute. I like that one too. I'd say Mark Twain was the encyclopedia of quotes. I think that's my favourite one.
Just to deliberately reincorporate the Mark Twain one, just say it again so we let it float there.
Yeah, so the two most important parts of your life. One is the day you're born. This other one is when you find out why.
Lovely. With the gift of hindsight, what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself, Andy Gott? So you can decide when you go back and holographically appear, wrap your arms around your own shoulders and whisper some wise words in your own ear. What would you say?
If I was to give advice to my younger self or go back and say something to my older self, I'd say, you're right. Because I was brought up with people thinking I'd never make it. People said, change your career, you're never going to make it. And I now and again doubted myself. So I'd go back and say, actually, you're right. Stick to it, you're right. But if I was to give some advice to other young people, I'd say, be yourself. Don't change yourself to please other people. Don't try and be something you're not. Be yourself. And if people don't like you for being yourself, they're not worth knowing.
Perfect. We're ramping up to talk about Shakespeare finally, but just before we do, this is a moment called Pass the Golden Baton, Please, an invitation which you don't have to follow the path of, but now you've experienced this from within, who in your network might you like to pass the golden baton along to, who might like to be given a damn good listening to in this way?
I'd say I've got three friends. Two of them are famous and one of them is famous in his own right. I'd say either I'd give the baton to Barry Gower, he's a prosthetic makeup artist, and it's B-A-R-R-I-E, Barry Gower. He is an amazing makeup artist, but I'd go down either Charles Dance. He is quite a cool guy. He has a litany of stories, but also the actor David Bradley. He is phenomenal. I mean, people might know him from being the Harry Potter, playing the caretaker, but he has done so much over the years. And I sat with him and he was telling me literally every actor you can imagine he knows or has worked with. Yes. Going back to like the 1940s, 50s, he knows everyone. He'd have anecdotes. So I'd have my baton to David, Barry or Charlie. Either of those would be well worth the plonk.
Well worth the plonk. And with your permission, if you can broker a sort of warm introduction, that would be marvellous. Thank you very much indeed. Sincerely, thank you. That's just beautiful. And now, inspired by Shakespeare, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. This is the actual book that I bought. It's not a first folio, but when I first went to the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School years ago, it says here, Chris Grimes, 16986, when I went there. I'm also about to be at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School interviewing Sir Gregory Doran, I think, live on stage, which is very, very exciting. So, inspired by Shakespeare, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. How, when all is said and done, Andy Gotts, Hollywood's favourite photographer, would you most like to be remembered?
Well, I'm lucky I already know my epitaph, which is good, but it was given to me by Ringo Starr. He set up the loveliest thing. And so for those who don't know who Ansel Adams is, Ansel Adams was a photographer of landscapes, and he'd done the most brilliant mountains in Yosemite, and it's just unbelievable. And the way he did it would, he'd get his bit of darkroom paper, he'd pre-flash the paper, and then do the zone system. So every photograph had the pure white, pure black and eight shades of grey in between. And his landscape, you see every nook, every cranny of this of his mountains. And Ringo Starr made the little quote, Andy Gotts is the Ansel Adams of faces. And I think that will be on my tombstone, because I'm the only celebrity photographer. I don't edit faces. I don't retouch. There's no Photoshop. So when I go click,
That's it.
So you can see every wrinkle, every crow's feet. Some people comment on my work, why haven't you edited out? You know, but it was, I'd done this lovely picture of Lauren Bacall when she was 88. And you can see her face. And you can see every single line. And when I was at her house, she lived in the Dakota building. And that's a building where Lennon got killed outside. So you can't photograph within a building. So I had to UPS my camera in, which you like shuffle down when you go in. So I did the secret photo shoot in her house. I shot her on a very close lens. And she said, yeah, these lines Katharine Hepburn gave me, these lines Bogie gave me. And she, and it's just like her face was the map of her life.
Yes.
So why edit them out?
Yes.
You know, I don't understand why some magazines think, you know, the public thinks, you know, I'll give you a great example. A great example is Rolling Stones lead singer, Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
Okay. So Mick doesn't like his wrinkles. So when you see him on stage, there's a filter on the camera. So you know, beside the stage, you see the screens.
Yes.
It's to mirror out a shadow, reflections on your skin. So he looks more youthful. But there's this great photograph. Someone stood behind the monitor, photographing the monitor and Mick Jagger. And so you can compare the real Mick Jagger to the one you see on the screen. And it's like, people, Mick, know your face. They see that, so you don't have to pretend you don't have lines. We know you're in your 80s. You know, it's something to be embarrassed about. So I think, you know, Ringo's, you're the Ansel Adams of faces. That's going to be my, when I cark it.
And it's Ansel Adams, is that right?
Ansel Adams, yeah. Ansel, so A-N-S-E-L, Ansel Adams.
And just so we've got the quote, knowing the spelling of the name, just say the epitaph once again, just to deliberately reincorporate it.
Andy Gotts is the Ansel Adams of faces.
Wonderful. We're going to ask a final question in a second, but now I'm just going to do a very exciting moment, which is called Show Us Your QR Code, Please. So if you've been watching and listening to this extraordinary journey and traverse through the clearing by Andy Gotts, if you're watching, you can scan the QR code straight away. But it's very simple. You just go to andygotts.com. And the whole world of the black and white signature landscape. And you're also showing a book. Tell us more about that, Andy.
This is just my last book. This is my lockdown book. So during lockdown, I had 18 months of no photo shoots. So I went through my entire 30-year collection.
Yep.
And I've done a book of contact sheets from my archive. And so this is my latest book. It's called The Photograph.
And I'm just going to unmirror you just for a moment. So I'm going to hold the book up again. So there you are. I'll keep you mirrored for the rest. Andy Gotts, and that's the... And who's that on the front? Sorry, her name's just gone straight out of my head.
Scarlett Johansson.
Of course it is. Apologies. Of course it's Scarlett Johansson. Lovely. So go and buy that book too. Just a couple of announcements from me. If you've been enjoying listening to this show, the website for my show is thegoodlisteningtoshow.com. In rather exciting news, it syndicates to iHeartRadio, Brushwood Media, and also UK Health Radio. So potentially there are tens of millions of listeners across the world listening to the show as well. There's also a very special series strand to the show in case of extra interest called Legacy Life Reflections, which is to use this same curated structure to record your life story for posterity. That's legacylifereflections.com, helping you to take a trip down memory lane with this structure. Andy Gotts, One Shot Gotts, as this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, stories of distinction and genius, and I can't tell you what a privilege this has been. And thank you for saying yes when I asked you that facetious question. I think you're a bit of a genius. Please, can I talk to you? Is there anything else you'd like to say, Andy?
I would say to people either starting out in an art, so whether you're a painter, whether you're a ballet dancer, whether you're a poet, I'd say, you know, there are several quotes out there that, you know, people can associate with trying. The best philosopher, you don't need, you know, an Asian clever quote. The best quote was by Rocky Balboa, where he says, you know, it's not how hard you can punch, it's how hard you can take a punch and get up and keep moving forward. And I think I had that in my head when I was a jobbing photographer, and every phone call was a thank you, but no. There's times you think, is it worth it? It's the strength to go forward, the strength to think, actually, one day, I'll get there. So I think for any artist, anyone who's finding a struggle, especially in this current climate of AI and current climate of, you know, people don't believe what you do anymore because they think you've just typed it and it's come up. I think for creative people, it's a really hard life at the moment. I'd say you're going to get hit hard. Stand up, keep moving forward. You might win the fight.
And the Rocky Balboa quote, obviously Sylvester Stallone. So I know you photographed him as well. Obviously. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Andy. You don't have to say yes, but someday may I come and visit your man cave because it just looks extraordinary.
If you win an Oscar or Grammy.
I'll work on it. And someday I would love to be on the receiving end of your lens. But anyway, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. And
thank you, sir.
Yes, and who are you photographing next, if I may ask?
You know, I can't tell you. I'm doing a project that's lasting a year, and I'm going to America twice a month doing this book that's coming out next February, and I've had to do an NDA. I can't even say what's revolving, but I'm doing this massive thing. It's going to be the biggest thing I've ever done, and it's out next February.
Wow. So, ladies and gentlemen, I've been Chris Grimes. Most importantly, this has been the wonderful Andy One Shot Gotts. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much indeed. End the stream. Good night.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the Series Strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, please do so. And if you'd like to have some coaching with me, care of my Personal Impact Game Changer program, then you can contact me and also about the show at chris@secondcurve.uk. On X and Instagram, it's @thatchrisgrimes. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.